Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
And this, of course, is LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina, your host, in studio with Bob Brill.
Hey, yes.
And I'm Bobby Jean Bell, who is our roving reporter in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Howdy.
Oh, there we go. In just a minute, we're going to get started. I just wanted to say that we have a really great show lined up for you tonight. We have a really great author, and her name is Lou Bayer, and she will be talking about civility, of which I expect all of you to be civil. And we have that, and we have all kinds of rusty comments, and all of that's coming at you right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
And I am absolutely sure that everybody knows who that was and what song that was. And it actually kind of fits in tonight with our guest.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
That, of course, would be Aretha Franklin.
I can't do that anymore.
You knew that, right, Bobby Jean?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just checking. We didn't know the movie, but we knew the song.
I was, like, tapping my toes and singing along and forgetting that I was on a radio show.
Actually, I'd already turned you off, so.
Oh, good.
That's what everybody says to Bill.
I know, huh? Well, welcome again to the Writer's Block. This is a show where we get to talk to writers about their process and how they wrote their books, and we gear the show towards new writers, and hopefully, we do some really good stuff in the industry. And Bob's shaking his head, and we were both over here chair dancing, so I know that he liked the song. So,
it's the 60s.
I'm telling you, it was the 60s. That's right. So, you've typed your final period, Bob. You've stacked your last chapter. You sat back in your chair and you said to yourself, I'm done. Nope, not even close. Sure, you finished your manuscript, but it takes a whole lot more work to have a completed book. Know what it takes? Bobby Jean, do you know? It takes editing.
It takes a lot more than just having written the end.
Exactly. It takes rewriting and editing and more editing and more rewriting, and then it takes formatting and proofreading, and then more rewriting. And if you're very, very, very fortunate, 6 months down the road, you can devise a cover, and then you can get it to a printer and possibly get a publisher and get a nice book on your shelf. Well, why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books do all that for you? For a very small investment, we can do all of the above for you, and you get the finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing. And it'll help you get some dollars in your pockets as well. So we are here for new writers that don't have the foggiest idea what they're doing. So having learned it, we can share and help you get a book of which you can be proud. So give us a call, 805-795-3165, or you can email me at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com, or R. Paolinelli, P-A-O-L-I-N-E-L-L-I, at tuscanybaybooks.com.
Well worth it.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, you skip all the mistakes that you're going to make anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Know? That's right. And in addition to Tuscany Bay Books tonight, I actually would like to put a note out there for all the writers and the publishers and the agents and the publicists and everything else that is out there. If y'all would be interested in helping to sponsor the Writer's Block, email me personally at jimchristina@yahoo.com, and I'll be happy to give you the program. And if you're interested, we'll damn sure take your money. So, Bobby Jean, I believe he has something you'd like to say to the folks out there.
Well, you know, week after week, that Out West Shop is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and Western lifestyle. But do you know we also have what you need to complete your special costume for Halloween? Old West badges, bandanas, really cool hats, steampunk hats, top hats, cowboy hats, and such. Or maybe you're going to a Day of the Dead celebration. We have shirts with skulls and, again, bandanas and belt buckles and all kinds of things like that. So we say shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, and home decor and general merchandise. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com. And we love our Writer's Block listeners. Enter code WB100 and receive $10 off your order. And we love to talk to you toll-free by phone, 1-877-340-9378. It's always a great day out west.
Okay, Bobby Jade, I want a picture of Jim Bell wearing a Day of the Dead t-shirt.
Me too. I really want to see that.
I think we can do that.
And the mask.
Yeah, and the mask.
With a cowboy hat.
We can do that. A bandana around his lower face, right?
Okay. Well, let's get in and embarrass our guest even further. Lou believes that civility is its own reward. She suggests that in choosing civility, people find their best self, and in doing so, they experience the grace, courage, generosity, humanity, and humility that civility engenders. For almost 20 years, Dr. Lou Bayer has been internationally recognized as the leading expert on civility at work. With a focus on social intelligence and culturally competent communication, the team at Civility Experts, which includes 367 affiliates in 43 countries, has supported 100s of organizations in building better workplaces. In addition to her role as CEO of International Civility Training Group, Civility Experts, Inc., Lou is chair of the International Civility Trainers Consortium, president of the Center for Organizational Cultural Competence, and founder and the Good Company Etiquette Academy Franchise Group. Please welcome to the Writer's Block, Lou Bayer.
Hello.
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 Hello. So we got copies of your, actually partial copies of your book. We only got four chapters, but it's your book 30%.
Right.
And why don't you give our listeners an idea, or you know, take a couple, 2, 3, 5 minutes, and let them know what that book is about.
Okay. So thank you so much. First of all, it's really a pleasure to be here. The book, people often want to know about the title, first of all, so to give you a sense of it, the 30% solution is based on some research by Watson Wyatt, suggesting that organizations that embed civility in their workplace experience, on average, 30% more profit, up to 20% reduction in turnover, and also measurable increases in productivity and morale. Mm-hmm. So there's a good business case for civility, and that's where the 30% comes from. And so the book is really a toolkit. It's got all sorts of resources and research and tools you can use, all sorts of insight from the field. It's kind of a practical handbook for business owners, HR people, managers, trainers, coaches, and really people who work in really crummy workplaces who just want to make things better.
So how would you define civility as you see it in your book?
How do we define civility?
How would you define
civility? How do I define it? Well, we have a very specific definition that we use. One of the challenges is that people think that, like my friend Aretha, who I heard earlier here, a lot of people just associate civility with respect, and that's mistake number one. Or they think that it's about manners and, you know, don't wear white after Labor Day, this kind of being perfect social skills kind of nonsense.
Wait a minute. You can't
really
wear white after Labor Day? What kind of crap is that?
With the exception of white socks and sandals, I think that's the only exception. but no, you can't. But anyway, that's not what civility is about. It's about you know, we have three aspects about conscious awareness that you can impact others with your thoughts and actions. It's about continuous acknowledgement that just because we're human, we have a responsibility to ease the experience of others. And it's about a consistent effort to adopt civil behavior as a non-negotiable point of character. So I know there's a joke coming from one of you at this point, but
nope.
You can't be civil some of the time. You know, you can't just be nice on Tuesday and then not be so kind on Friday. You can't use "I'm hungry" as an excuse not to be civil some days. You know, there's no black and, pardon me, there's no gray area. It's black and white. You're civil or you're not, period.
Hmm. Really? So you can't pick and choose.
No, you can't pick and choose.
Okay.
So you can't, you know, you can't be nice to the pizza delivery guy and then not be nice to the taxi driver. You can't be polite to your current wife and rude to your ex-wife. You know, you can't
that's
pick and choose. Oh,
well, wait a minute. I think that's on page 47 of the book. I mean, I think it's an unwritten law. You have to be nasty to the ex-wife. That's part of the deal.
I guess one of the things that comes up is specifically in recent times with the Me Too movement and workplace, not so much etiquette, but just the stuff that goes on in the workplace that we're finding out more and more. Are you seeing, are you seeing that your book is more necessary now than it was previously, or what?
Well, I think it's always been necessary, but I would agree with you that because there's been, you know, some incivility in politics recently, some incivility in, you know, Hollywood, this whole Me Too thing, as you've suggested, there seems to be a greater awareness that it's a common kind of everyday issue where people maybe endured it previously and just didn't talk about it. There seems to be kind of open forum now to talk about it. So topics related to civility, for example, I would often say that respectful workplace policies that almost every organization has are not really worth the paper they're written on. If I said that out loud 5 years ago, people would literally throw things at me, but now they kind of get it, that, you know, you can't just talk about it. You have to actually put something into action and make some changes. So, I think there's as much need now as there ever was. It's just people are more open to actually hearing it now mm-hmm. than they were before.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know in the state of California, especially in that's because where we are, in California, the state has mandated that certain things have to go into employee manuals. And you have to have mm-hmm. an employee manual if you have over 50 employees. So, I mean, there are certain things
right.
about harassment that have to go in there, both sexual and just general. There are certain things about
right.
What am I thinking of? Golly, I just wrote employee manuals and I can't even think of it.
Well,
conflicts of interest that have to go in there.
Conflicts of interest.
Mm-hmm. And I know from experience, because for over 30 years I was the vice president and CEO and general manager of a company in Camarillo, and I dealt every day with managers who couldn't be civil mm-hmm. to their mother, much less their employees. And
right.
let some
right.
go and sent some other out for more training and more training. And so it's very hard for some people, and I would think you would agree with this, especially in the workplace. It's very hard mm-hmm. for some people to be civil because they have this chip on their shoulder for some reason.
I have a question. You've been involved in this for so long that you would have seen, I'm assuming over the 20 years, some changes in the workplace. You talk also about the new modern workplace, which is certainly much different from when I entered the workforce in 1978. But I was curious if you see this incivility rising. Is it becoming... You know, I look back over my almost 40 years of working with others, and it seemed to me in the beginning of my career, we were incredibly civil in the workplace. But as time marched along and new generations of people entered and became coworkers that were, let's say, 20 years younger than me at the time, perhaps now they would be millennials, that there's a shift going on as new people enter the workforce. Is that, would that be true, or is that just my, you know, my distorted view of corporate America today?
Well, I mean, I agree. Yes and no. How's that for an easy answer? you know, what we find is that it really isn't a generational thing when we get right into the mud and kind of look at the root of things. It really isn't a gender thing. What we're finding increasingly is that people are fearful. You know, one of the quotes in the book, I say that the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. It's a mm-hmm. David Thoreau quote. But they're just not so quiet in their desperation now. And with downsizing and all the economic pressures mm-hmm. and technology and keeping up with change, people are just at a point where they're overwhelmed and overstressed and in many cases underpaid. They can't balance their personal life with their work life. They don't have good health care. There's just so much going on and so much a lack of security, psychosocial security, but also financial security. And what we're seeing increasingly is that these low-level, basic, what we would call Maslow hierarchy of needs aren't being met.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people worry that, you know, they have to walk 40 blocks, you know, because they can't afford a parking space.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they can't sleep because they have to leave 2 hours early to get to work and commute or work two jobs even. Or there's just so much pressure and stress where previously you kind of knew that you were going to, if you were lucky enough to get a good job, especially if there was a union all those years ago, you were going to stay there for 30 years. Your friends and family and neighbors and community, you know, everybody was kind of associated and supported and close at hand, and you know, you just figured out how you were going to stay as opposed to figuring out how you were going to leave,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, these days we tend to go into situations, workplace at least, 1 foot out the door before we've even fully arrived.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're always looking for something better. Maybe it's the internet influence and so on, but there's not the same kind of pressure to figure it out and to learn how to interact and communicate with people. We don't even have to have face-to-face interactions anymore. You know, employee feedback and firings, even hirings are just online.
Mm-hmm.
You don't ever have to look anyone in the eye. So what we describe as social capital is lacking. You know, why would I be kind and friendly with you or share a piece of birthday cake at lunch if I don't expect to see you, you know, beyond 4 weeks, right?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, Lou, is that who do you find in your research, who do you find is less civil, men or women, in the workplace?
It depends on the context. So men and women are equally uncivil, but not equally uncivil depending on the context. So in certain workplace environments, we find women are more uncivil if you're including behaviors such as gossip, discrediting. You know, it depends what the indicator is. But we find that men are more uncivil when it comes to overt assertion behaviors, so swearing at work, physical aggression, you know, pounding the table, lateness, even men, was reported more often with men. Inappropriate dress was actually reported more often with men. Humiliation and embarrassment was more often reported with men. And then if we look closer in some, you know, in manufacturing, because it's predominantly men, of course, we're going to get higher stats for men. So, you know, it depends on the context, but both equally, really.
I have found that people in the workplace that are extremely uncivil and they treat employees very badly. As soon as they start that, the employees lose respect. And once an employee has lost respect, I've found that it's almost impossible to get it back. And once a manager loses respect, that's it. I mean, he's pretty much done.
Yes, and I'm so glad you mentioned that, because this is one of the key key messages. So when we're called into a workplace, we always start with the leadership and the executive because everything flows down, and they really determine the culture. But the first thing I'll ask them is questions about equality. You know, I'll say, do you think that that frontline person or that woman or that handicapped man or, you know, referencing a, you know, a different range of employees and peers and even people at their management levels, do you feel that this person is deserving of the same benefits and pay rate and, you know, whatever else?
Do we lose you?
Human level.
Okay.
Oh, and if they can't say yes, that they believe everyone is equal, then we know that we've got very serious problems. And the easiest way to describe it is, I would say, respect is never something that you have to earn. So if somebody says, you haven't earned my respect yet, what they usually mean is, I don't trust her, or he is not worthy of my trust, right?
Mm-hmm.
Usually people mix up trust and respect. So when you say, never get the respect back, it's really trust they don't get back.
Mm-hmm.
Respect mm-hmm. is something that just because we're human and on the planet together, we're each equally deserving of respect. You should never have to earn it, right?
It's your story. I always thought that you shouldn't have to earn respect. I always thought that respect was something that was earned, not given. And if you act like a total jerk all the time, which would be a lack of civility as well, then people are not going to respect you for whatever reason. And I think once an employee loses respect with a higher up, their productivity goes right in the toilet.
Here's one way that we can maybe elaborate on that point a little bit, because you know, we do quite a bit of work with peacekeeping. You know, the height of incivility, of course, is genocide and these kind of things. But if I say to you, even if you don't like that boss because he mistreated you, mm-hmm. do you respect him enough as a human being that if the building were on fire, you would run in and do what you could do, if you could do it,
wow.
save him, right? Like mm-hmm. when you respect somebody, and whether the person is, you know, Arabic or French or Jewish or Filipino or fat or a woman or a man or pregnant or, you know, no matter what the issue or the perceived difference is, we should be respecting each other just because we're human. And then if I don't trust you because you were unkind to me or treated me badly or called me by a name or whatever, I agree with you. That trust mm-hmm. is something you have to work really, really hard mm-hmm. to earn back from me.
If you ever can.
And mm-hmm. yeah. That's right. And maybe mm-hmm. you can't. And I think oftentimes that's the problem. And we don't teach young people to repair anymore. You know, we will say you're sorry, right? Or just post a smiley face or something online. Mm-hmm. But we don't teach people how to apologize properly. We don't teach them to mm-hmm. finish the sentence and to measure consequence and to make real legitimate, mm-hmm. authentic repair. Mm-hmm. when they've done something wrong or harmed someone. And mm-hmm. I believe that that's a bigger problem. If we could teach repair mm-hmm. And accountability, mm-hmm. we wouldn't have the incivility that we have.
Hmm. Well, to answer your question about whether I would run into a burning building and grab somebody I didn't like out, to respect as a human being, probably, but he would be the last one I would grab.
And that's fair, right? That's honest.
Sure.
It's honest.
And then if I tripped and fell, oh well.
You write a lot about soft skills. I thought that was really interesting. Could you just quickly tell us what falls under the title of a soft skill and maybe how you measure it?
Sure. So, I mean, there's a whole range of soft skills that are often overlooked. You know, for a very long time, my younger life, they were perceived as nice to have skills. But increasingly, we see there's some research out of Harvard that said that soft skills, specifically your ability to interact successfully with others through your verbal and nonverbal communication, accounts for up to 85% of your long-term success in life and in work. So there's partly because of demographic shift too, there's more of a focus now on an understanding that it doesn't matter if you have 9 degrees or you can speak 4 languages. It doesn't matter if you've got buckets of money. If people don't want to be in the room with you, you're not going to be very successful. You know, long term, you have to have high social intelligence, which is a primary social skill. It's one of 4 skills that underpin the ability to be civil. So soft skills are actually measurable. We have a whole grid. There's some free assessments online at our website and so on, but you can actually measure the extent to which somebody can read and interpret nonverbal and contextual cues. That's called social IQ. Cultural competence, which is your ability to relate to, even when you don't have full understanding, people that are different than you, that's a soft skill. Systems thinking is a bit more measurable, but it's considered one of the 4 skills for civility as well. And the last one is continuous learning. So the ability to ask questions, the ability to find information, the ability to empathize with people. You know, I believe on Hans' list, which we have in the book, there's about 70 soft skills. You know, there's a whole roster of indicators as to whether or not you're going to be able to engage successfully socially, and that includes online now.
Mm-hmm. Good enough,
so
Bob.
Do you find that lack of civility, I guess is what I'm going to ask, in the workplace can be results driven? And what I mean by that is you may have a harsh coach on the football field, but he wins. He's very uncivil to his players. But in the regular workplace, you find that upper level bosses they'll overlook the lower level bosses being less than civil because they get results.
Oh, absolutely. I see that's a very serious problem. And, you know, now that we look at the research a little closer, we see that kind of short-term thinking, you know, those bosses maybe or leadership team who is only looking at the bottom line result, or maybe that's the highest ranking salesperson on the team, and they look at the money he or she is bringing in, but they're not looking at the other measurables, which might include the cost of retraining the 9 people who quit because of that salesperson, mm-hmm. or the impact to, a customer bought one time, but they're not coming back because the salesperson was rude. The impact to everything from the way the rest of the team use their time to stress leave and third-party toxicity, where that salesperson being abrasive maybe to a colleague, the colleague manages it reasonably well, but the 3 other people observing actually absorb it and take it home, and it impacts them. And what we see is if you actually look a little closer at all of the costs and consequences of those behaviors, the costs usually far outweigh any perceived benefit, and especially if you look at it over the long term. But I would agree with you, frequently we put up with or accept or tolerate. There's a bit of a double standard for perceived performers are allowed to behave badly, mm-hmm. Where somebody who is new or maybe not as successful initially is expected to toe the line. And that's part of another big important piece of the research that we discovered was that there's a lot of workplace policies that actually foster incivility. Mm. It's the policy itself that creates an uncivil environment.
Hmm. I'm going to stop you right there. We have a real short commercial we have to do, and then we'll be right back with you if you wouldn't mind hanging on.
Sure, thank you.
Okay. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? It is for Bob Brill. No, for your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for one or two-night getaway or maybe an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. So when your dog returns home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better? Well, we already know, it was the dog's and Bob Brill's. So check out their website. I turned you off. Check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. Your dog will thank you, and Russ will thank you, and Karen will thank you, and I'm sure Bob Brill will thank you. So 805-524-1100, alldogsrule.com. Okay, it is now 7:30, and we are on in the studio. Bob and I are in the studio with Bobby Jean on the phone, and our guest for tonight, which is Lou Bayer. She's written a book about civility called 30 Degrees Solution, or 30% Solution. And if you want to call and talk to Lou tonight, the number in the studio here is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. This hour just flying by.
Yeah, I know.
It's really gone. I looked up and it's, oh crap, it's time to do a commercial.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Dr. Bayer, if I were an employer and I was interviewing, and civility was very important to me. We were setting a new standard within my company. We were really, you know, wanting to make, you know, we were really wanting to follow your recommendations. How would I conduct an interview to get some idea of whether the candidate will already have the mindset that I'm looking for? If that is a makes sense.
Sure. So I think one of the most important things is that the company first know what it stands for, you know, what are its values, what are its expectations. And many, many organizations have, you know, values supposedly, but they're just words. And to your point, I think one of the things that we need to do more often is, if civility is one of our corporate values, we need to define that. But then why don't we ever ask potential employees what they stand for? You know, we have some great values activities in the book, for example, but you could just ask them if you had to pass on three aspects of character to your children, or you wanted to be remembered by something, what would those three things be? Mm-hmm. And with any luck, that potential candidate would say civility and integrity and honesty or whatever would align with the organization's values. And then you can ask, so you said civility is a core value for you personally. What does that look like exactly at work? How does a person show that they're civil? You know, you can give situational examples. You know, there's all kinds of ways to test that way. And I think another thing that we would frequently do is a social intelligence test. You know, we would do a short social IQ test, because if a person is high in social IQ, they're going to be more present, they're going to be aware of contextual and cultural and nonverbal cues, and they're going to be sort of conscious of what's going on around them. And if you're not paying attention, you're not going to be able to adapt or learn, etc. And the reason I'm raising that point is because the research is showing that social intelligence has plummeted by about 65% in employee candidates over the last 10 years. So it's a very serious problem.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I know a lot of this has spawned an entire cottage industry, you know, that we have. If you go to apply to a corporation now, you have to sit down and watch a video put out by a separate company that does all this. I was wondering what your thoughts were on those programs that are out there. Are they, I mean, I've watched some of them, and it's like, come on, this is like really basic stuff that everybody should know, but maybe everybody doesn't. So I was just kind of curious of your opinion on those programs that employers use when they hire you to have you sit down and watch these videos and things.
I don't love them. if I'm direct about it, I think that they're a bit of a waste of time. I feel like they're a bit lazy. I would say that my experience has been 90% of the time it's the HR department or the organization checking a box, you know, for legislated or legal reasons. You know, did you describe harassment? Check. Did you check? But the fact that somebody is in a room watching a screen, number one, doesn't mean they're paying attention, and number two, doesn't mean they understand. As we talked about briefly, soft skills, social intelligence, cultural competence, thinking, like these skills are so important to fostering civility that they really need to be hands-on, practiced. There has to be some practical real-life leadership and leading by example. I really don't think that if you've never experienced civility that you can exhibit it. And watching it on television is not the same as experiencing it. Mm-hmm. So I would much rather see mentor programs or buddy programs or you know, some real concerted effort in the first 8 hours that somebody's in a new job to take them around and introduce them face-to-face to people. You know, show them the comforts. Here's where your locker, your bat, you know, like, don't kind of just leave people standing there with an app and a television. You know, it's the high-touch interactions that build trust as opposed to high-tech interactions. So, you know, I really personally think that most of the time they're a complete waste of time.
I want to actually, I really want to ask this question, and I don't know what kind of an answer I'm going to get, so I'm going to ask it anyway. Did this book or your whole thing with civility and everything else, did this stem from something that perturbed you or bothered you in your younger years, that it became a cause de force for you to take it up and make it, push it forward and push it forward and push it forward?
Well, you know, I think maybe at the time I didn't realize it. In hindsight, I see that kind of all kinds of things led me to this point. But, you know, it really was an employment situation. I was director of operations for a hotel chain. And hospitality is a difficult gig if you've ever done that work. I heard you talking about some Italian restaurant stuff earlier. But I think kind of the, you know, when you watch every Friday night people having their wedding and they put all this time and trouble into it, and guests show up in their yoga pants or there's a 4-foot sign in the pool area, you know, a 4-foot sign in the pool area that says no food, and people are walking by with 6 pizzas in a box, you know, just right past the sign. You know, you come down to the hotel for breakfast, you know, to set up the breakfast room at 6:30. And there's people who think that it's okay just because they're in a hotel to come down, like grown people in their pajamas and sometimes very little pajamas and bad breath and like why is that okay? It's just I think maybe that experience, you know, people treating servers badly, servers licking buns before they put them in a basket because a guest treated them badly. You know, you just, I think that experience kind of put me over the edge a little bit.
I have seen that so many times in hotels.
And watching people eat, like, really. Have you been to a public restaurant and watched people eat lately?
Oh, I try not
to.
Table
manners.
I try not
to. Oh, my goodness. You know? So it was, a few things. But, yeah, it's, I didn't expect to do this work. But I think, yeah, I don't really know how it happened.
Yet here you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I'm always surprised on the airplane, and I don't fly that often, but, you know, they come through regularly to give you their trash, you know, give them the trash. It's so simple. And then you get up to go, and it's like, there's just trash everywhere. And you think, how do you people live at home? You know,
yeah.
Do you just throw trash down on your kitchen floor? You know, what is?
Yeah. Yeah. And I travel a lot and really, is it believable that people don't know that there's a protocol to get off the plane, that you let the person in front of you go? Like, people are just wild animals charging it. It's really shocking to me, and I believe people know better. It's just we've made it allowable to be rude, it's almost like it's acceptable to sit across the table from someone and be on your phone and just ignore. When did that become okay? Mm-hmm. You know, and why don't we say anything? Mm-hmm. And it's just shocking to me what we let people get away with. And on my lazy days, I guess I do it because nobody's going to correct me if I don't correct them. But it's a crazy world we live in.
Well, anymore, I mean, you correct somebody and they're liable to get a fist in your face.
That's the other thing. Exactly. You know.
Think about airlines, We all hate airline food. Everybody hates it.
Yeah.
There's no one in
the world. How can you hate honey roasted peanuts?
Well,
come on.
I mean, no, but airline food. And the first thing people want to know when they get on a plane, am I getting fed?
Yeah. Well, if you're in first class, you are.
Yeah, well, that's true. You still get bad food, even though it's first class.
Right. If you're in coach, you get, you know, $7 meals, and it usually comes down to the hummus and the sticks.
That's true.
So, Dr. Baer, you've written a number of books. I see in your biography there's I think 14 publications or more, and you write a lot of articles and such. We don't have a lot of time left. Would you mind just sharing a little bit about, like, what was the writing process behind putting this book together?
Thank you, Bobby. I was going to get to that.
Well, I'm an information junkie. I just can't learn enough, and I guess because I'm a trainer by trade, and because I work with corporate audiences mostly, where people are really needing you to prove to them that a new idea is a good idea, I was always very fact-based, you know, statistics and research and all of that. So, you know, over the last 20 years of teaching and training, you know, I'm always gathering sources and resources. And then when you're lecturing and training, I found this brilliant little thing called Drag and Dictate. I don't know if you know that app, but you can put it on your phone. Do you know it?
Well, I have the program for my computer.
Tell us.
Yeah.
Tell us.
Yeah, it's called Drag and Dictate. So whenever I would be lecturing or rehearsing a speech, you just say drag and on, and the little light goes on, and it's talk to text. So I could practice my whole 1 hour speech, and the dragon is capturing it and changing it to text, and there's chapter one of my book. You know, there you go. And you can copy and paste. So, you know, just your thoughts. Like for me, the writing process, it really most of the time it's a talking process. And then I have I just talk like I'm lecturing or having a conversation. And then you can sort it out after the text is on the page. And I find it's very free flowing. You tend to get a lot down in a hurry. And it's pretty easy to sift through it after the fact, or let somebody else have that dirty job. it's very, people say sometimes 6 or 8 or 12 months to write a book, I guess, because I'm always gathering the bits of information. It's just kind of on a wall with 200 sticky notes. It's pretty easy to sort out all the bits of information, but my books, there's 16 of them now, are really the same kind of toolbox. It's not a little bit of original thought in there, but it's mostly just putting together all these pieces. So it's not like a fiction book, which I suppose is much more difficult. Mm-hmm. This bit of kind of nonfiction, fact-based work, I honestly, if I could do nothing but that, I would, you know, find myself a little cabin in the woods and a case of wine, and I would just write.
I heard the W word.
Yeah. And it is Canada. Yeah. You got a lot of space up there.
You got a lot of wine in Canada. Like, oh, I want to go to Miami.
Well, and I know you have a lot of footnotes, and of course that's because as you're sharing, you know, you've pulled so much information from others that have written about the same topic. And I enjoyed that you like the book Good to Great, which I remember reading when it first came out, and it just wowed me. Talk about sort of new thoughts, because he blew up myths that we had all lived with in the corporate world, and he just turned them on his head. And it was so interesting, his whole process of research to go and get those get what he got. And it was really cool. They're like, oh, wow, she's got good to great in here.
yes. And that's the thing. You know, I mentioned I'm I travel a lot, so I'm always reading on the plane. And I feel, you know, I don't know about you and your work, but for me, even 20 years in, I'm really privileged to be called an expert in the field. But there's always that kind of imposter syndrome. I don't know enough, and somebody else knows more, and who's doing some research? I just always kind of clamoring for more. And I think that part of my success has been that collaboration. It'd be highly uncivil not to credit everybody who's been doing all those years of good work before me. So I feel like it's a privilege to have access to that and to borrow it now and then. And I've been so grateful that most people are very kind about sharing their work.
Well, we are actually running out of time. We're going to forego the question tonight because you've already told us that you pretty much speak most of your chapters.
So, that's a long answer.
Can you let our listeners know where they can contact you and your website and your email and all your good stuff?
Thank you. It's civilityexperts.com, and I'm Lou, Lew, at civilityexperts.com.
And the book is
Amazon too.
There you go. And Amazon and all online booksellers, right?
Yes, that's right. Thank you.
Okay, and the book is 30% Solution, and it's came out in June of 2018. And you've been listening to Dr. Lou Bayer, and we want to thank you so much for joining us tonight, Lou. It's just been a hoot having you, and this hour flew by. It just virtually did.
Thank you.
It really
went fast.
I just have to say, be kind to the ex-wife.
I have something to say about that, which is fat chance. We actually we call her from the dark side.
Thanks so much.
So anyway, thanks for joining us.
Bye-bye.
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 Okay, Dr. Lou Bayer.
I wonder if she's an ex-wife.
I don't know. I didn't want to ask because, you know, what are you going to do? Who are you going to call? So anyway, fun show.
Yeah, very much.
I mean, the lady is interesting. Not that I'm surprised, mind you. But, I mean, I never knew there was so much about civility that I didn't know you were supposed to be nice to the ex-wife.
And the stepmother. Like said, we're not all story. Wicked witches.
Well, Bobby Jean, you know what? I have a hard time believing anyone would ever think you would be wicked. Good God.
Oh, you don't know.
Well, I mean, I've never, you know, I've known you for as long as I've known you. I've never seen you upset or pissed off. So I don't know. I'll have to ask Jim someday if I ever see him again.
Jim would tell you there's an evil twin. The evil twin has never come out at him, but he has experienced the evil twin a couple times. Well, and he's always a tad shocked.
Well, mine's name is Roy. So yeah, it's my evil twin. I mean, somebody says, you know, did you do that? No, it was my evil twin, Roy. So anyway, I have an announcement that I'd like to make. On the 22nd of this month, we have a book signing with one of our authors, Dr. Bruce Solheim, Bruce Olaf Solheim, and his book, Timeless, A Paranormal Personal History. Mm-hmm. He'll be signing from 10 to 2 o'clock at the $5 or less bookstore in Simi Valley. And he's a good guy, and if you like paranormal stuff, he'd be more than happy to sit and talk your ear off because the guy's got all kinds of stories. He actually was on the show with us, and we did his book for him.
Uh-huh.
And Bruce is a good guy, so he's
a very cool bookstore.
And it's a very cool book. That's right, you were there. It's a very cool bookstore.
When is it again?
The 22nd of this month. It's a week from this coming Saturday. And it's from 10 to 2. And please do stop by if you're in the area and you're interested in the paranormal. Stop by and see Bruce.
Where is the bookstore?
It is on Cochran Street in between Sequoia and Sycamore.
Okay.
It's actually right next to the Staples.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's a really nice little bookstore. Well, it's actually not that small.
Yeah,
but
it's you could spend a lot of time there.
You really can.
You spent a lot of time there.
That's right, you did. And again, if you'd like if you're interested, I got a hair just flying around over here. If you're interested in talking, at least getting
the idea. I have done on my head.
I know, so you flew off. You took your hat off and the guard was moving. If you're interested in possibly doing a sponsorship on the Writer's Block, we'd be more than happy to give you the information. If you just give me an email, jimchristina@yahoo.com, and we can spell it all out for you. It's really not that expensive, and it gets you a lot of listeners, because right now we're up over 500,000. So, I mean, if you want listenership, you've got it here. I think that's it for us, except next week, Bob will be missing.
Right.
Bobby Jean will be missing. And I have as a guest John Marriott. He's a photojournalist, and he's taken some really cool pictures.
You're going to be able to show those pictures online.
No. We're going to have John describe them.
Which is going to be interesting.
I mean, like, this is Yellowstone. Oh, uh-huh. This is two grizzlies humping.
Okay.
Do Facebook Live and hold
If you're listening right now and you're thinking, I don't think I want to. No, you need to be here.
Yeah, you need to tune in next Thursday, because I can guarantee it's going to be a fun night. And then, of course, the following week is Russ Avidson, and I'm going to make him start doing his own commercials when he's in the studio. Okay, that's it for us tonight. Bobby Jean, thank you so much for joining us and for going through your second radio show of the day. Bob, it's always a pleasure having you in the studio with me, and, you know, it just we appreciate you being here.
I appreciate being here.
We do appreciate you, and I like your book.
Thank you.
In fact, I may kill you in the elevator going down and take it from you. Okay, that's all for us, and y'all have yourselves a wonderful evening, and we are out of here.